This is Returns on Well-Being Institute podcast. We bring you the latest and best strategies, tactics, and information to help employers boost their bottom lines by investing in healthy and engaged workforces that deliver real ROI. Welcome to today's program.
I'm Stephen Van Yoder, co-founder of Returns on Well-Being Institute. Let's face it, the data about the current state of employee well-being tells a grim story. Research by Gallup found that only 23% of employees feel engaged at work, and 59% say they are emotionally detached at work. They also show that despite the rosy narratives from companies about how they value employee well-being and put in place programs to foster higher employee well-being, are not aligning their actions with the rhetoric to create and maintain supportive workplace cultures. And this disconnect is bad for business. Research from Deloitte shows that organizations with strong cultures are 21% more profitable, yet most companies do not invest in building these types of cultures. The result? Burnout, high turnover, and bottom line losses. Here to discuss all this today is our guest, Al Curnow, Vice President of CultureWise. With over 25 years of experience in employee engagement and workplace culture, Al has helped over 150 organizations design and sustain what he calls incredible cultures. Today, Al will discuss how C-suites must make workplace culture a priority and support meaningful culture change as a business imperative. Al, thank you for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure, Stephen. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to our discussion.
So let's start with the biggest question of all. What is workplace culture? What does that mean?
My definition is a very simple one. Really, it's how we do everything we do. It would include everything from how we approach our work, how we perform tasks. It includes how we treat each other. And perhaps one of the most telling definitions of our culture, Stephen, is how we respond and react when things can go wrong in our organization.
And our research at the Returns on Wellbeing Institute shows that culture is one of the most important spokes on the wheel, if you will, of the total package of what constitutes a organization that supports employee well-being. What's going on with culture in the American workforce?
You know, we've had the privilege of working with over 1,000 organizations now. Admittedly, our audience, our clients, are somewhat of an anomaly in that they work with us because our organization helps companies define, build, and sustain great cultures. I think the norm is an opposite to that, in that I think many leaders of organizations out there are beginning to understand how important and how critical culture is and well-being is. The vast majority of these leaders don't really have an idea as to what to do about it in a meaningful way. It's culture has long been thought of as this soft and squishy, somewhat nebulous term. The work we do is to help organizations to get really, really clear in terms of what they want their culture to be, but more importantly, ways and methods to proactively and systematically drive it. My belief is that there's a huge chasm.
What are some of the aspects of culture that don't work? Like, what are some of the common problems you've seen? And then let's look at, you know, what is the research saying about building truly effective culture?
Well, one question we'll often ask when we're doing speaking engagements or meeting with leaders that are interested in working on their culture, where does culture come from? And we'll always get some mixed responses to that question. Some leaders will respond by saying, well, it comes from the top, which I think is mostly true, or it comes from our people. Usually where we arrive is that, to your point, Stephen, every organization has a culture, but absent any effort or intent or systematic process or approach to shape it, In my experience, cultures will typically take on the shape and form of the strongest personalities within that organization. If those strongest personalities are your good ones, right, that espouse right. those things that you're trying to espouse or important to you, then you're all set. Again, in my experience, oftentimes those strongest personalities aren't the ones that we want to replicate. They tend to be the most unhappy, you know, they're discontented in that nothing is right and so forth. And I think that's the danger. That's the danger in not being proactive in driving a strategy and having consistency in cultivating our culture. The research shows if we can get the culture right, every study demonstrates the fact that it will positively impact engagement, retention, performance. There are even financial studies that have been done that show that organizations with great culture, if they're public companies, stock companies, their stock prices are worth more. I've seen studies that go back to the 1930s. Of course, we didn't call it culture then. I believe it was called organizational climate. Back that far, there was clear-cut evidence that if we could get the culture right and build and drive a positive culture, the payoff would be enormous.
One of the biggest hits that employees can take from a culture that's not supportive is their mental health, their stress levels, right, which is intertwined with mental health. And not just on the job, but, you know, they take this home. You know, where you've seen cultures that are not supportive, what they can do to people's mental health and that how that can even hurt the employer's product, services, and their reputation.
I do a lot of sessions with workforces. In addition to working with organizational leaders, part of our process involves working with front lines and team members,
right.
all employee meetings. And so the way I frame it is this, in terms of really defining and building out the importance of culture, I'll say, have you ever worked in an organization that was unhealthy, that didn't have a great culture? And I'll ask them what it felt like. What did it feel like on Sunday night, to your point, Stephen? I mean, what do they call that, the Sunday scaries? And it really resonates because team members understand that can happen in our professional lives, much like it did when we were fifth graders or sixth graders or seventh graders in school. Same thing can happen professionally. And it really helps to bring home the significance and how visceral culture can be. If we can build a culture where our team members on Sunday night are excited about coming in and can't wait to get back to work and work on a project they've been working on or being able to connect back with their teammates in a healthy environment, that's where the payoff starts to build. Most importantly, when we can drive a culture like that, we're addressing something near and dear to your heart, Stephen, the well-being of each team member. And again, great leaders get this. They understand that if we can take great care of our team members, they're going to do better work. They're going to want to come to work. They're going to be excited in the workplace. The energy level is going to be higher. You can walk through the front door of any of these organizations and literally feel the positive energy.
If you had sort of column A and column B, let's just say three things, what would three really important issues be that you think companies get wrong with culture and how that would affect the employee experience, and three things that exemplify good cultures, supportive cultures, cultures that help companies achieve their own objectives and help employees feel good about working at that company and support their well-being?
So in terms of things that they get wrong, starting there, I see things first in one being not being clear enough or intentional enough in terms of defining or driving the culture that they're looking to build or drive. Item number one, in terms of where many organizations fall short, is there not providing enough clarity and context of what it is they're looking to build. The other area, and this is true, I think, with any initiative or program, whether it's culture or general leadership or whatever it might be, I find there's a real mix in terms of how effective and prepared leaders within the organization are simply to lead, Stephen. A second item would be a general lack of consistency amongst leaders throughout the organization, whether it be senior leaders, middle managers, supervisors, and so forth. The third item I'd see, and this can really undercut any good or positive work we're doing on our culture, is leadership's inability to lead by example. Because you'll have team members, employees that are taking their cues, and they're looking around and seeing how things are done around the organization. And if they see their leaders failing to live to the standards that they've been told are important, then
right,
the effects can be really, really negative. Now, to flip that over, like, what are the organizations doing well that are really driving great cultures and the well-being of their team members? They're providing clarity. They're making it crystal clear from day one, even before day one, in the interview process with their team members. They're making it really clear in terms of who they are, what they're about, how they do things. Throughout the life cycle of that team member, they're reinforcing those standards and those behaviors. It's systemic. It's not occasional. It's not just an occasional training program. It's just part of what they do. Second thing is they have leaders that are good leaders. I'd say leading by example is probably one of the most powerful things we can do organizationally to demonstrate that, yeah, we're serious about this stuff. As an organization, you know, from the top throughout the organization, we have those expectations. But then, if you don't mind, Stephen, I'm going to add a fourth to what organizations as well do. And that, they create accountability around it. They create accountability for themselves, for their team members. Because without accountability, it just becomes another initiative that falls flat eventually. Yet if we create consistent accountability around it, we're demonstrating and reinforcing and showing that, no, this is real. This is important. I'm a big fan of the work done out of the University of Michigan Business School, Positive Organizational Leadership. And the research that they've done shows that if we can come at leadership generally from a more positive standpoint, our team members will thrive and grow and we'll get it.
Your four points: clarity and context, leadership consistency, leading by example, and accountability. Those four things. They all point back to leadership. A lot of the both research, interactions we've had with the well-being sector and people that work in it, webinars we've given, feedback we've gotten from the audiences, is that human resources or the individual or department tasks with developing and implementing corporate wellness policies feel like they don't have that much control over any of those things because they're C-suite things, and they often leave culture to somebody else and nobody grabs the baton, or it's a lot of what you say. They're policies and aspirations that don't really have the four points you mentioned, with the biggest being leadership support, leadership hands-on, not just support, that assumes it's built and it's being supported, but engagement with the idea, developing it, refining it, keeping it pure to its intention, continually evolving it to achieve the company's goals and what the employees need. How do we overcome that? Or how have you seen companies deal with that?
Without the most senior leadership support of any initiative, it doesn't work, certainly for the long term. So it has to start there. It has to be, from a senior leadership standpoint, non-negotiable, that we are, whether it's building a great culture, building a culture of well-being, there has to believe that belief and support of that idea, that it's probably it is the most important thing. Once they have that senior leadership support, they're able to cascade it through their organization, because it's got to reach everybody.
Yes.
But one of the most powerful things I've seen, and it is part of our approach, and it speaks to human behavior. You know, human behavior is such that we tend to like the status quo, whether we admit it or not. And I know I'm overgeneralizing here, but if you look at the classic bell curve within most organizations, right, you get the people at the front end that are your superstars, your positive deviants, if you will. They're just incredible. And then on the other end, you have those, some of whom probably shouldn't be with your organization. They'll never get it. They'll never be happy. But typically in most organizations, most people tend to fall in the middle. We want to come into work. We want to do good work. We want to do our best. We want to improve. We just need the support, the tools, the clarity, and the consistency that allow us to do that. It's about creating habits within our workplace and structure within our workplace that reinforces the behaviors we're looking to drive. Because research has shown any lasting behavior change requires a change in habit and structure. But it starts with awareness. We first have to be aware of, okay, what are we looking to build and drive? Because if we're not doing that, it's impossible to build habits and practices around it. And regardless of the behavior, whether it's behaviors around well-being, around how we do our work, how we treat other team members, how we treat our clients or customers, we can build structures and habits that reinforce those things.
How would an HR professional, armed with, or easily armed with, you know, we've got turnover rates that are not good, we're losing good people, and our exit interviews are saying they don't like certain things that we can point back to culture. How do you take this and strategically get the C-suite to be aware of it and then to do something about it?
In my experience, no one understands the connection between culture, well-being, and engagement, retention, performance of their people. No one understands that more readily than a good HR professional. The challenge becomes, you know, we can do something. There are some things we can do. You know, we can make the business case. And there is plenty of research, including your own, Stephen, that you've done a wonderful job assimilating. And studies, again, that go back decades and decades and decades, that demonstrate the impact of culture on performance and on a whole host of other positive payoffs. Yet there has to be some level of appreciation of that from the leader, some level of meaningful appreciation of that, not just kind of a passing, yeah, that sounds good, let's try it.
Right.
Because again, to move the needle on creating a better culture, a culture of well-being, it takes practice. as does getting better at anything. We're not going to do it with a one-off intervention or a 90-day fix, a 90-day diet of cultural work. It's a forever thing.
Right.
And so therefore, the leader has to have a level of an appreciation and understanding of it. And again, we can make the case. We can make the business case. We can demonstrate, show the numbers Yet at the end of the day, in my experience, and again, I'm a positive guy, as you know by now, Stephen, but I'm not nearly as optimistic that we can always make the case with all leaders, because some are just either don't get it or don't care. You have to have at least some degree of appreciation for the importance of this for an HR professional to be able to successfully make the case.
So let's talk about what you've seen in your own work about companies that get it right.
We have a client, Don Johnson Motors. First off, they're based in Rice Lake, Wisconsin. Don Johnson, interesting the study in that they were, or they are, I believe, at least a fourth, if not a fifth generation family business, had always had a good reputation, were always did good work, hired good people. Yet they made a decision to get really serious about improving their culture. Tough industry, right, Stephen? Tough to get and keep good people, tough to get and keep good service people and technicians and so forth. And even though they were a fine organization beforehand, they needed to address that. And so got really serious about their culture, created clarity around, all right, who do we want to be? What does that look like in terms of specific behaviors? Put some practices and rituals in place to reinforce that. But then they also did some things in terms of reinvesting in their people. So during COVID, for example, when a lot of their competitors were laying people off, they did just the opposite. They reinvested in their people. They didn't lay off a single person throughout the entire time of COVID. They were doing things to take care of their team and help prepare and equip them for when we came out of COVID. Just a short time ago, a couple of years ago, were named by the trade paper within the auto dealer organization, named Don Johnson Motors as one of the top dealerships in the country. Josh Johnson, who's the president of the company, was asked, all right, how did you do it? What did it take? He gave credit to becoming really serious around recognizing the importance of culture and putting meaningful structure and practices in place to reinforce it.
What do we see as the biggest cultural challenges in a business context that are coming down the pike in the next handful of years?
Regardless of where you stand politically, recent political, whole host of things that are creating unease amongst our team members. I think that's a biggie. The blend of generations we have in the workforce right now, 2, 3, 4 different generations represented in the workplace. So within any one organization, that can make it challenging. How we talk, how we perceive things, how we do our work, how we approach our work can make it incredibly challenging to drive consistency, let alone culture within our organization. We have the whole DEI front, and there's even been some disagreement within the human resource camps in terms of how that's defined, and some controversies there. Then there's the ongoing things that we'll always have, challenges around talent. How do we recruit? How do we develop? How do we retain our best people? And then to me, a kind of a bigger overarching, if you will, issue is around leadership and how we're leading. And the idea that historical leadership has been built around a more transactional approach. It's getting the parts out, getting the deliveries done, getting the things built, getting the customer served, which are all incredibly important. Yet so much emphasis from a leadership standpoint has been built around the transaction. I see a trend starting, and the good ones get this, is that our leaders need to be more and have the ability and opportunity to be more transformational.
You've mentioned, and I've spent quite a bit of time looking at the generational composition of both the United States and the work the workplace. If more and more workers, your essential human capital, have expectations about the workplace, and those expectations focus on a culture that supports their working time, their downtime, their work-life balance, will companies increasingly be forced to look at culture, because they're not going to have a good solid workforce or people standing in line wanting to work at their company if they don't?
I pay a lot of attention to a lot of those studies as well, Stephen. And for example, on the idea, as part and parcel of that is COVID's impact on driving the argument about remote and hybrid and in person. You can be incredibly effective working remotely. A lot of the research I've studied shows that, gosh, it's just good for human beings to be around other human beings. So if we're talking about well-being, but right. That's just kind of one small part of how complex some of these issues.
So tell listeners how to learn more about you and your company, CultureWise.
Absolutely. Thank you, Stephen. So CultureWise.com is our website. We have some great educational content on our site that really lays out kind of who we are, how we help organizations of all sizes. We have clients that have 15 employees. We have some clients that have 15,000 employees and everything in between, every industry. Some great content right there. You would have the ability there also to get on our weekly blog, where we're producing some great content around the topic and ideas of culture. Reach out to me. I'm happy to speak to anyone who wants to have a conversation around culture, whether it's how we can help or just something you want to share or discuss. And I'm at al@culturewise.com. Can also find me on LinkedIn as well. I'm pretty active there.
You've been listening to Returns on Wellbeing Institute podcast. To learn more about our resources and programs that help employers make employee well-being a bottom-line business strategy, please visit www.returnsonwellbeing.com.